Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. It's been a while since I've done one of these sort of cold opens, but I'm doing something a little bit different because we're celebrating World Verdejo Day. So I'm doing some work with one of my favorite wine regions in the world, Rueda. Rueda, I'm sure if anyone listens on a regular basis, but if they haven't, cool. It is a winemaking region in northern Spain. It's about an hour or so north of Madrid. And the interesting thing about this wine region is they almost solely focus on white wine, which is rare in Spain. And the grape, it's mostly Verdejo, and we'll get more into that. There's also some Sauvignon Blanc. They do a little bit of Tempranillo and some other stuff, but the main focus is Verdejo. This podcast and my next one, I'm doing two different ones. Each of these podcasts will feature two different people related to the Rueda region, whether it is owners or people that help to sell the wine, but these are all people that are CEOs connected to the wineries. And as I said, it is World Verdejo Day, June 11th. What I love about these wines, and you'll hear it when I talk about it in the variety of interviews, is that there is different styles. I appreciate having that sort of choice, just having those options out there. You have the really inexpensive, like you can find a good one for $13. And the light, refreshing, stainless steel style, great on the patio, just a nice sipping wine. Not one you're going to sit and brood over hour after hour. It's just a good white wine. And it's a nice alternative to, say, Pinot Grigio. And I know in the past I've ripped on Pinot Grigio. That's mostly because a lot of the stuff we get here in Ontario, you don't get the good stuff. Obviously, there's millions of gallons of great Pinot Grigio, but it's just going to be hard to get access to it here. The point here is that I want to make, these are wines to try, not to say I'm getting rid of a different white, but just having something else in the arsenal. Have another option. Maybe you're in the mood for something a little bit different. You don't feel like a big, heavy Chardonnay. You're not in the mood for Riesling. I don't know why you wouldn't be. Then I would suggest these wines. And so I said, different styles. So you got the very simple, fresh style. Then you've got ones with more body and character coming from older vines, aged on their lees, maybe see a little oak, but rarely, but a lot of concrete and the concrete eggs and things like that. So just different methods of fermenting and aging these wines. I mean, they even have sparkling and fortified versions. The point is, it is a great region to explore when you need to add something else to your collection of white wines. Highly, highly recommend. And if you want to find out more about these wines, check out your LCBO or type into Google Rueda plus consignment companies, because I can tell you the work that's being done by a friend of mine, Jessica Glover, and her company, Glow Communications. She's helping to get more and more of these producers available in Ontario, certainly in Quebec at the SAQ, and check out the LCBO. Check out your local wine consignment companies. Find out who is representing the wines of Rueda. If you need to find more information, also winealign.com. They do a lot of World Verdejo Day events and tastings, and it's cool because you get to try wines with the food from the area, and it's a really neat way just to learn about it. Anyway, that's enough yammering about me. I'll talk a little bit more in part two. So we have two interviews. The first one is with Mathilde Lortant from Bodega Campo Elysio. And oh, another great bonus is you're going to get to hear me mangle so many Spanish names and mangle the names of guests and especially the names of wineries and the types of wines out there. And her wine, the Cuvée Alegre Verdejo, got some of that more character to it, some more complexity because it's a mix of aging vessels, stainless steel, steel tanks, concrete, and some oak. And of course, she is part of the Lortant family. And I mean, these people make wineries, make wine all across the world. Obviously, France, Spain, Chile, Argentina are just some of the places the Lortant family make wine. So we are going to start with Mathilde. Enjoy.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. We are doing a bunch of interviews celebrating World Verdejo Day, June 11th, here in Canada. And joining me now, the director of Bodega Hermanos Lortant, it is Mathilde Lortant. Thank you so much, Mathilde, for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to participate to the podcast.
Yeah, well, there's so much I want to get to, including the wine that's available here, and everything about Rueda and Verdejo. But I want to first start with, how did you get into wine? Was it always going to happen just because of your famous family?
Actually, no, it was never going to happen until late 20s, when I decided I wanted to definitely work into the wine business. And my uncle, François Lurton, told me, okay, if you want to do that, you first have to do a full harvest. So I've done that. And since then, I am in the wine business.
Okay, well, tell me about that first harvest. Where was it?
François has two wineries over there, Bodega Piedra Negra in Mendoza and Hacienda Araucano in Chile, in the Lolol Valley. Beautiful places, both of them.
And was it tough? I'd love to hear about what you had to do for that vintage.
It was very tough. It was very physical. At the time, I wasn't speaking Spanish because I've learned English and German at school. As you can hear, I'm French. And so I was completely lost. And but it was so fun at the same time. You know, harvest time, there is a kind of emulation going on. So everyone is on 100% running everywhere. It's great. So at the end, it's one of my best memories, I have to say. It was epic.
What time? I'd love to hear. What time did you start? Was in the middle of the night? Physically, what is it like when you're out there harvesting?
Well, especially in Piedra Negra. Piedra Negra is quite an important winery. So there is like 150 hectares of vine. And there is a time of harvest is very long because you start with Pinot Gris like early February, mid-February. But you can finish with the red 2 months later. So when it's time to have the Pinot Gris, for example, you have to be on to harvest very rapidly. So you harvest day and night. So you have two shifts, from 8 in the morning to 8 in the evening and from 8 in the evening to 8 in the morning. So you are on the mornings or depends on the week.
That's...
But you have a few weeks. It's not always like that.
How was it? How did it feel on the last day?
But you have a few weeks where it feels great.
And you were saying before we got cut off a little bit because of Wi-Fi. How long does it take? You said it takes the harvest takes a couple weeks.
No, the harvest in total is 2 months.
Oh, okay, sorry, 2 months. Oh, right, starting for the Pinot Gris, and then what would be the last grape? What would be the last grape that you guys would harvest?
At the time, I think it was some Cabernet Sauvignon, but you know, it was 2005 and it may have changed now.
Tell me, and I want to get into the Cuvée, is it the 2019, the Cuvée Alegre Verdejo that is coming from the Bodega Campo Elysio. And again, you correct me on all my poor pronunciations. But before we get there, I was wondering if you could tell everyone just a little bit more about your family and the impact that the Lurton family has had in the wine world.
So the Lurton family, we are winemakers from Bordeaux. I am the fifth generation of winemaking family. Mainly, all the family is in Bordeaux with different properties, each and everyone independent. We are a family, but we are not a group as a business, I mean. And it is really Jacques and François Lurton who started to travel in the 80s as consultants in the wine world, and they fell in love with different terroirs within the world, and they decided to start their own wineries and projects in different countries. So this is them, François and Jacques, that goes away from Bordeaux, and now François is the sole owner of those wineries. So in Argentina, Chile, Spain, where I work, and also Languedoc Roussillon.
So let's go to Rueda and the Verdejo, the wine that is it's available at the SAQ, which is in Quebec, and you can get it through consignment here in Ontario. The Cuvée Alegre Verdejo 2019. I was wondering if you could tell people what should they expect from this wine.
So Verdejo is a great variety from this appellation, Rueda, which is northwest of Madrid, in a very not desertic but arid climatology. The perfect combination with Verdejo is that Verdejo is locally from this region, so it has adapt to the dryness and is able to produce a very still fresh and well-balanced wine. Something also very interesting is that it has some versatility. So you can have Verdejo, you will find some Verdejo very fresh, like a Sauvignon Blanc, very sharp. But also when you start working with the Verdejo, with the lees, the skin, ferment in barrels, you start to have something much more complex, and you go from something little Sauvignon easy to go to nearly a Chardonnay from Burgundy. You go from very easy to go to very complex and with aging capacities. I mean, here in the winery, we have Verdejo in bottles since the fermented in oak Verdejo, I have to say. Since 1994, and it is okay on the oxidative side, but you can easily have a good Verdejo 10 years after the bottling.
I think my favorite version I've had of the Verdejo is one where maybe it didn't see oak, but it was from very old vines, spent, you know, a couple of weeks on its lees, and you just get sort of that spicy herb complexity on the mid palate and finish. And those wines you could sit for 6 to 8 years easily.
Yes, so this is something very you bought Sauvignon and Merlot, but it shows a very great terroir.
What about the bottle that people can buy, the Cuvée Alegre? Is it Alegre or is it Alegre, the 2019 Verdejo?
It's Cuvée Alegre.
Alegre. See, I mispronounced it all the different ways. So the Cuvée Alegre, the 2019 Verdejo. Ha! What can people expect from that wine?
So the Cuvée Alegre, it's actually a wine that is partially fermented in oak. So you will have the perfect match with food. It doesn't have to be complex. It can be your summer salad. It can be a white fish. It can be only as an aperitif. But you will find a wine that goes perfectly from your first glass as an aperitif through your lunch or dinner very easily. It is, for me, it has how do you say the versatility, especially to go from something very, not very, but easy to join with your food.
I had one of those wines with some white fish, with some slightly baked white fish the other day. It worked perfectly with we call it pickerel here in Canada. Mathilde, what would you say is the reputation right now of the Rueda, the Verdejo grape, but the Rueda wines? What is the reputation within Spain and globally?
So in Spain, since 10 years, it is a big commercial hit. It is a big success. So the number of vines have grown a lot, I have to say, from nearly the double of what it used to be 10 years ago, more than that. So you have a lot of younger style of Verdero on the market because it is younger vine. The vines with a little bit more of age are doing Verdero like the Cuvée Alegre, something a bit more complex, worked on leaves, worked with wood or barrels. And the younger vines, they do young style. So you will find those two parallel style of Verdero. There is not one Verdero. There is the younger style, which is a big success in Spain for the moment, and the more complex Verdero, which is much less winemaker or wineries doing that. So you have less volume of that quality of Verdero. The big volume is the younger vines planted recently, which provide a volume able to challenge what used to be 10 years ago. I remember in England, and I think in Canada, you had it also, the Pinot Grigio.
Yep. Oh, yeah. No, how I kind of see it is you're right. You're young, fresh, stainless steel Verdejo. That wine is meant to be the alternative from the Northern Italian Pinot Grigio. But then on the other end,
French Sauvignon Blanc, young vines.
And then on the other side, your older vined, sometimes fermented in oak or on lees, those wines, it seems like that's where Rueda wants to put up against Burgundy as this complex white wine with body that, you know, is meant to really be more of a thoughtful wine. I was wondering your thoughts on that.
Yes, exactly. Even if it is accessible, because we refer to Burgundy as a maybe style or a range of wine, but the price of Rueda is still very accessible. It is. Those are wines that still are cheaper than most of the Burgundy I was referring to. So you can have a very complex wine that you don't have to wait 10 years, like I was saying. It's just for the amateur, but you can drink 2 or 3 years after. But much more accessible in terms of pricing.
Mm-hmm. What about with COVID? How has that impacted you guys and wine tourism, which I know is so important for you?
In Spain, we were on a lockdown, so it has been difficult, as everywhere, for what we call the hosteleria, the restaurant business, which was completely closed. And then in terms of wine tourism, we had to stop the wine tours. But since January, we are back open in Spain.
One last question, and that's good to hear. That's great to hear that things are back open and things are going better for you guys. One last question for you, Mathilde Letang. I really appreciate you joining the podcast. Where would you like to be? Where would you in 5 years from now? Your bodega. Where would you like it to be internationally?
I wish really to share much more our wine and the style of Verdero that we produce in Campo Elíseo abroad. I don't say that because I'm working over there, but really they are terrific. I love the wines that we produce, and I think we have something different and interesting, still at a good price point. I have to say myself, I fell in love with the Verdero, and so I wish to have more people falling in love like me of this grape variety and region.
You know, I got about like 2 or 3 more minutes here. The interesting thing is, you would have started in Bordeaux, and then you were, as you said, in South America. How much did you know about Verdejo before you arrived in Rueda?
I was. I knew the Verdero because I was already working with François, and François is my uncle. So we had Verdero before, during lunch or family time. So I knew about it, but I hadn't realized what was the region and how important it was in the world today to have something so authentic And also something, you know, we speak a lot of the ecological side, sustainability. This is so sustainable to be in a region where it's so dry and you have a great variety adapted to dryness. It is great. I mean, it's wonderful. A lot of vineyards in the world, they have to irrigate. And us, we don't have that. Naturally, we have a good white grape variety, not a red one, but a white one, adapted with sufficient pH or acidity to make very interesting wines. So for me, it's a big richesse. It's very important for the region.
Well, Mathilde, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. Let me tell everyone again, their 2019 Cuvée Elegre Verdejo, and yes, I mispronounce it again, but I will. You can find it in Quebec. You can get it in consignment in Ontario. And for the price point, it's ridiculous considering the age of the vines and the oak and just everything that's gone on with the wine. It's a great one for people if they want to experience and discover what the Verdejo grape can bring. And Mathilde, congratulations on all your success and keep up the great work with the great Lurton family. You guys do the wine world a big service, and I so appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Matthew.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Mac Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold. And we're back. Before we move on to the other interview for part one of my World Verdejo Day podcasts, I wish I had more time with Mathilde because I wanted to talk to her a little bit more about her family, the Lurton family, why they decided to go to Rueda and what was it about that area, those soils, the Verdejo grape that interested them. Because did I say interested? Interested them. I think I might have mispronounced that. Anyway, this is a winemaking operation that makes millions of liters of wine to over 60 countries. And they make high-end, great product in France, Spain, Chile, and Argentina. And they put definitely a big focus on trying to make wine that is not too expensive, which works so well because the wines of Rueda are pretty inexpensive when you consider crazy old vines, so much of it hand-picked, like just the process that goes into making that wine. And yeah, I just wanted to talk to her a little bit more about her journey and the work she does with Alessio, but clearly if Lurton is there, that means a lot. On to the second interview, and I wish this one was on video. This is Pablo Del Villar, the owner and the CEO of Bodega Hermanas del Villar, and he tries two of the wines and he's pouring them and he looks great. He's in a nice suit. He's got the logo in the background, and I've got bad hair and a t-shirt, and I wanted to drink wine, but it was like 10 in the morning. But I'm watching him sitting there pour it. I'm like, oh my God, why can't I have a glass? And I'm like, well, because it's 10 in the morning and you still have your day job to do. So I showed some restraint, which isn't often the case. I know that these wines are absolutely available in Ontario. Again, go to the LCBO. You do a little, just the minorest amount of Google work. You can find it. Winealign.com for more information as well. Glow Communications can also help you out in terms of being able to find different producers and where you can access their wines in Ontario and in Quebec. So anyway, here is the second interview I'm doing for part one of World Verdejo Day. This is Pablo Del Villar. Hey, everyone, and welcome back. It's the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. This is another part of our Rueda edition as we are celebrating the northern Spanish grape of Verdejo and all the joy it brings to us. Joining me now, Pablo Del Villar, the owner and CEO of Bodega Hermanas Del Villar. Pablo, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast.
Thank you to you, Matthew. It's a real pleasure for me.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure. I've tried your wines, the Oro de Castilla. I've tried both your 2016 Los Hornos and your 2019 Verdejo. I'll start here. I was wondering if you could tell people a little bit about the different styles of Verdejo that your bodega makes.
Yeah, we have a little bit different approach to Verdejo grapes than other people that here in the area. Because our motto in the winery is very easy to say, but a little bit difficult to carry on, that is extraction with no modification. That's easy to say, but when you are on the winemaking process, this is a little bit difficult. And the basics of this idea is that we have a singular grape, that is Verdejo, that not only, but mainly grown in Rueda. We have very, very good soils for this variety. Then we try to avoid any kind of modification about the style and the character of the variety. It's a variety that is, Verdejo is a relative of Sauvignon Blanc. They are cousins. Both of them, there are thiolic varieties. But keep in mind something that is very important. Rueda is between 750 and 800 meters over the sea level. This is the reason because in a southern latitude, like Rueda, we are in the 40 parallel at the same highness than New York, for example. We are able to make world-class white wines with enough acidity, enough complexity, and with ability to be keep on the bottle for more time than we usually expect. Then the reason or the altitude together with the climate, we have contrast of temperature. For example, today, now, there are outside the winery, there are 32 degrees, very, very hot. It's a very warm day. This night, the minimum recorded on the thermometer of the winery was 5.
Wow.
5 to 30, 25 degrees of contrast between day and night. And this is because our altitude. And this is the reason because we are able to have very good quality grapes to start making the wine.
And when you say extraction without modification, that's basically you're trying to get the full essence of the grape into the glass, but without altering it in the winery. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Then first, there are mainly two steps, very important one. First is harvest time, picking. We only pick the grapes during the night. Because the reason I explained before, because the temperature is ever lower in the night. If we are working with a wide variety, temperature and sunlight, they are the enemies of the complexity and the flavor on the juice. Then, so cool and so quickly we transport the grapes from the vine to the winery, as lowest time we have, better quality of flavors we have. Or, in other way, we don't throw out the character of the grape. Then we try to keep this character. When we have the grapes on the winery, we made a process of enzymatic extraction of the flavors that there are on the skin of the grape. And after this soft extraction, it's only a question of to put the crushed grapes into a vat and to leave for 8 hours, 9 hours, it depends, at low temperature. We press the grapes in a very gentle, with a very gentle system to avoid the extract of fusel oils from the seeds. And in this way, we have a juice, an oxidized and very, very aromatic juice. From this juice, we can start to make the wine. And to avoid interference in this process, we are the only winery in Rueda that has its own, I don't remember the word in English.
Laboratory?
Its own yeast.
Your own yeast.
Our own yeast strain.
Yeah.
Ailed from the wild yeast on the vineyards. This is a long work of 5 years with Salamanca University. We have the patent of this yeast. And the idea for choosing this concrete yeast was the yeast that, in our criteria, has less modification of the character of the grapes. Commercial yeasts are great; there are very, very good ones, but all the commercial yeast has some modification of the character. There are a good idea; it works very well. But we try to go a step ahead and avoid modification to keep the character and to give to the customer in the glass that we can taste on the grape.
So you guys created You guys created over years your own yeast.
No, we don't create it. This was a God creation.
Yes.
We take from the nature.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. Yeah. Good. No, that is a good correction. Can you tell the listeners what's the difference and what can they expect? Because the two wines that we are having in Ontario, the 2016 Los Sonos and the 2019 Verdejo, I was wondering just a little bit of a difference in the two. And I'm jealous because right now Pablo's holding both those bottles. It's 10:45 in the morning. It's too early for me to drink them. But I was wondering if you could tell people a little bit about the wines.
Yeah. Here you see for sure the bottles are different.
Yep.
There are outside. We are going to start with Oro de Castilla Verdejo. This is 19 because we are totally out of stock of 20 because we are out of stock of 19 on the winery, and we are now
congratulations. Congratulations.
What's Oro de Castilla? Oro de Castilla is the pure expression of the varietal. It's a wine that is very fresh. It has a strong nose, but not too much because I'm too worried about. Then we are looking more intensity, more elegance, more complexity. We are looking more elegance and complexity over intensity. For sure, a white wine must to be very intense in the nose. But we are in a step lower than other wines. We are we give more relevance to complexity and elegance than for intensity. If you let me to take a glass of wine, I'm better speaking with some wine.
Do it.
Yeah. Yes. A moment, please.
As
fresh, because outside today is very, very hot.
Look at that. Glass myself.
Yeah. The nose is, if you close your eyes, is like you are outside a day of spring. In a green lawn with flowers and with apricot close to us. Then it's a blend of fresh grass, flowers, white flowers, and fruit at the end. Fruit like apricot, banana, a little bit of pineapple, citrus. All these flavors, some people ask why the wine, you can find notes of guava or banana or pineapple in the wine. And wine is made from grapes, not for pineapple or banana. Mm-hmm. It's because the aromatic compounds of the majority of the fruits, they are common. There are common aromatic compounds. And grapes, some varieties of grapes, has a lot of these compounds together. Then our role in the winery is saying that you rebel a photography. Like 10 years ago or so on, we try to show these aromatic compounds all together with equilibria into the wine. Very fresh. Today is a very hot day. And this is very fresh. We found in the mouth exactly the same than in the nose. Wines must to be coherent. And when you are finding something in the nose, it must be present in the mouth. In the mouth, we find the fresh acidity that keeps the wine alive, and a mix of these fruits that I spelled before, a little bit of citrus, of grass, of green grass, aniseed, and at the end, a salty character, a bit of salt. This comes from the kind of soil we have, that is a little bit salty and keep us not only the salty character, sometimes it's called it mineral, and acidity together.
So that is your 2020. I imagine younger vines, all stainless steel. Is there any other aging that goes into that? Only stainless steel. Okay. And then the second wine, the Los Honos, is that 2016 or is that? Is it a different vintage, the 2016, the Los Honos?
Yeah, this one is 17. He's saying
17.
It's out of stock on the winery. Yeah, mm-hmm. And this is 17. I personally prefer 16 because this wine needs more time in the bottle. up here. Right. Let me take a glass, please.
Yeah, take a moment.
Sorry.
Oh, please. No worries. No worries about it at all. And again, these wines are available in Ontario. And if you need to find about these wines, Glow Communications, Jessica Glover, we got people that can help get the wines to you.
Perfect. Well, this is Finca Los Hornos 17. Finca Los Hornos means Los Hornos plot. Horno means oven, the English word. And it's because there was, I don't know where, 300 years ago, there was a brick oven in this plot. Then this wine comes from a single plot. We have one in total. Our estate covers 150 hectares of vines. And Finca Los Hornos is a plot of 6 hectares. And it's the only plot in all the Rueda Dio that has the soil acid. This is a little bit abnormal in our area. Our soils are basic, and this one, we don't know really why, is acid. Then this was, initially, it was a problem because there was a vine that has a lot of problems of growing, of flowering, very low production and so on. And nobody knows what happens because nobody thinks that the soil was acid because it's so strange that nobody thinks about. Then when we released that the soil was acid, we changed totally the vine growing process on the soil, and we have Finca Los Hornos. The character is a little bit different. It's a wine that is less aromatic than the Young Verdejo, more complex. The winemaking process is a little bit different because at here there are 60 or 70%, it depends on the harvest, of big foudres of 1,000 liters, big wooden foudres of French oak, and another 20 or 30% of stainless steel wine. And we blend together in our taste. It's a question of taste. The juice ferment directly in the vats. They are keep it between 8 to 10 months. It depends on the harvest too, on the vats. And after this, they are blended with the stainless steel and put into the bottle after clarification and so on. Then there are, for one side, we have the ripe flavors of fruit, dry fruit like dry apricot, a little bit of apple, white straw. And in the second layer, we find a little bit of the wooden notes, not too much, because I don't like the over oaky wines. But the most characteristic of this wine is that there are at the end and flavor of peat or vegetal carbon or ink. There are, it's difficult to define. But it's a flavor that gives, and all the flavors that are together. It's a very pleasant balance between the fruit, the flowers, dry flowers too, and the peat and the dark flavors at the end.
I was saying in other interviews, I think my favorite version of Verdejo is 5 years age. Old vine, some, you know, on its lees, probably some concrete. If it's oak, it's super old oak. It's nothing new. I think I like the young, refreshing stuff, but I love the old vine lees, 5 years of age on it. I find there's a complexity and a body that can compete with high-end village-level Burgundy.
I make you a... I don't remember the word in English. A bet.
Okay.
We have from the winery and in our private collection, a assortment of wines since 2009 till 2020.
Ooh.
And we made only for press, usually. The last one was released in the Vinum magazine 2 months ago. We made vertical tasting of white wines from Rueda. This is something is not normal. But if you are interested, I can send you some samples to taste all together. is something very funny.
Yeah, I would love it. I remember trying when I was last time when I was there back in 2019, and the older ones, this honeyed almond, but still all that acid, but this full, it was full bodied. You could drink it with most meats, and it tasted like I would put the power level in the same as a nice, as a good Montrachet. Like they could compete with one another. Aged Rueda is rare, but it's always a treat, and it's usually not that expensive when you consider the time and energy that goes into it.
I totally agree with you. And it's a question of your own evolution. When you are starting into the wine, your first approach, there are sweet wines. After, you are looking for fresh, fruity, easy to drink white and rosés, a bit of young reds. And where you are changing, or when you are older, like myself, I prefer the older whites and younger reds.
Yeah,
it's a question of your taste.
It is so true. You get older and you like your white wines to be a little bit darker in hue and your red wines to be lighter in color.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah. All right, Pablo, I want to talk a little bit about you and how you got started. I believe it was the mid to late, like I think 97 when you joined the family business. I'd be curious, what were the early years like for you and at Hermanos de Valar?
A little bit of history about. Yes. My grandfather comes to Rueda 80 years ago or 70 years ago. I was not present, I don't know. And he bought a small estate up here in Rueda to grow, because we are farmers, we are a family of farmers, to grow barley, wheat, sugar beet, and so on. From the small estate of my grandfather, my father buys more plots, more land, and start to establish vines in 1988. He start planting the first vines, but with something very clever. He was looking the best soil for the vines, because our area is very big. Then the areas with the good soil, there are not unlimited. There are not big areas with good soil. Then my father chose the better areas to establish the vines, both Verdejo and Sauvignon Blanc. But there are different areas. When I was when I finished university, my father just started with the winery, and an old winery of 300 years old that he buys to the former proprietor. And when I finished my studies, I went to go in a petrol company. I stayed for 2 years working with gasoline and kerosene and so on. And I was worried about, and come back home and start to working on the winery. I think that in the 99 or 98, I'm not sure. And starting to work on the winery until today. And this year we are going to inaugurate, maybe next month, a new winery that is outside Rueda, because the old one, 300 years old, very nice, very fancy, a lot of old bricks and so on, was very nice, but was too small for us. Then we built, start last year and finished this year, a new winery outside Rueda. It's an investment of $4.5 million. And it's a totally new winery, bigger than the previous one. And the most important is a winery that is thinking for not to work. Mm-hmm. The people that is on the winery, nowadays, they only see the machines working. All the wineries focus it into to keep the character of the wine, very controlled temperature, absolutely clean. It's like a quirófano, like a surgery area. and with controlled temperature, and is sustainable. We all the energy comes from solar photovoltaic panels, some windmill, an electric yep. windmill, and biomass to have the hot. Then we are out of the grid of the electric power, and we have total sustainability. Excuse me, but my English is
it's really good. No, that was good. Yeah, the sustainability of it with the wind and the solar panels. That's fantastic. How much? I read your background was, and you kind of mentioned it there with petrol, but your background in chemical engineering. Yeah, did that play any influence, or does it play any influence today when it comes to decisions with winemaking?
Yes, for sure. Because you must never forget that wine is biochemistry. Then, if you don't know about chemistry, it's impossible to know about winemaking. Then we try to know as much as possible about the natural process of the chemical reactions of the wine. We made a lot of investment on the winery. Every year, we made a lot of investment. And finally, the conclusion of this investment is, generally speaking, is that it's better to have physical influence into the wine better than chemical influence. For example, lower temperature or higher temperature, higher or lower pressure, higher or lower electrical potential on the wines has more importance. And some reactions that there are more easy to keep into the time than if you add something. Then we try to direct the fermentation and the aging process of the wine in the direction we are looking for, avoiding to add something. Not because adding something that was bad, it's because we are looking for stability with the time. Then everything you add with the time will be rejected. But if you push, it's a little bit, it's easy to say, but a little bit difficult to carry on.
Yeah.
If you push the wine process in a direction with changing temperature, pressure, or electrical potential, the final result will be better.
Yeah, and it's all about that on delicate balance. Actually, I'm curious, the Rueda wine region, it's very different, isn't it, than some of the other big areas like Rioja, France, with Bordeaux and Burgundy, where those areas have centuries of history to them. You guys are still, not new to Canada. I mean, we're young as well. But in comparison to other European wine regions, you guys are still fairly young.
I totally agree with you, and agree and disagree, because vines were present in Rueda more or less. I don't remember exactly because I don't stay here. Ten centuries ago, Verdejo grapes was present in the area 10 centuries ago. And in the middle, at the end of the Middle Age, Columbus went to America in the early 16th century, the surface of vines in this area was more than multiplied by four the actual quantity of vines in the area. But for one side, with the phylloxera, and another side, with the highest prices of wheat, barley, and so on, the vines was flowing out. And all the Rueda area was an area mainly for traditional agriculture, like barley, wheat, sugar beet, and so on.
Yeah.
And this changed at late 70s, early 80s. When some people start to replant vines in this area, and the style of the wine changed from the all Serre-like style wines, very nice, but very, very difficult to sell, to the most young, more easy to drink, more aromatic wines. Then the area and the customers change on the same time. And this is one of the most important key factors in Rueda. We are making a good wine, and the most important, the wine that the market is looking for. Then there are a convergence between our winemaking style and the market, the consumption style. Then we are together. And this is the key of the success of Rueda. In the last 10 years, we multiply by 4 the number of bottles of Rueda sell it in the market. And we are not in the top. We are growing.
Last question for you. And again, I appreciate you joining. So that's the growth in the last 10 years. And you guys have been hailed as one of the models for Verdejo. Where do you see yourself and your entire region 10 years from now?
10 years from now, my idea is to go to the beach with blonde women and to lay down. That's my idea. But it's a little bit difficult to to finish. I don't know. But we have, I'm positive about the future of Rueda for 3 reasons. First is professionality. Both vine growers and winemakers, both of them, they are professional people. They work not only on the wine or on the vines, they are ever thinking on the company future. Then we have a solid basis to confront all the change there will be on the future. For example, the absolute disaster of this year with the COVID and the pandemic. There was no wineries in Rueda that are local, went to bankruptcy. Up here, everybody is hearted, is logical, but nobody goes to bankruptcy because the companies that are has a solid basis and has that we say in Spain, sentido común, common sense. Same with viticulture. Second idea is that Verdejo grape is very versatile. Now we are enjoying and we are selling our fresh, fruity, easy to drink white wines. Maybe in the future, I don't know where, the palate of the customers change, I don't know, maybe to more complex, more mature, more structured whites, or to lighter ones. And we are able to make with the same variety and staying linked to our area. That is very important. And third one is that market, the customers, not only in Spain, worldwide, I have the idea that they are demanding every day more the kind of wine we are making. Then we are all together. That's my idea. Maybe I'm on a mistake. But I'm confident with the future.
Oh, no, I say I agree with you. The versatility of that grape satisfies a wide range, and it's a good different set of price points. I wanted to say, Pablo, thank you so much for being on the show. Everyone out there, the Oro de Castilla, whether it's the 2017 Los Hornos or the latest 2020 Verdejo, these are excellent wines. I've had them many times, and I've bought a lot of yours and a lot of your neighbors' wines over the years. It's a great alternative. It's a great alternative to Pinot Grigio. It's a much cheaper and a satisfying version, as you'll find in a lot of Burgundy. And Pablo, I really appreciate you being a part of the show. Hey, it's World Verdejo Day, so I'm so glad you're able to join the show today.
Thank you very much. And the most important, enjoy the wine in good company.
Absolutely. Enjoy the wine in good company. Of course. Thank you so much, Pablo.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Goodbye, Pablo. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.